ready for argument now in the final case of the day, Daniels against Liberty Mutual Insurance. Mr. Brennan.
May it please the court. This court has jurisdiction to find that Joe Jaskolski was indeed an employee of the government entitled to the protections of the Westfall Act. First, the Supreme Court in Osborne versus Haley has made it very clear that the court has jurisdiction under 28 U.S.C. 1291 over the district court's order on the Westfall certification issue. The court stated that this was a final decision amenable to immediate appeal under the collateral order doctrine. Second, Your Honors, the consensus of the circuits is that the Supreme Court's decision in Waco many years ago governs this rather than 1447D.
Have there been any post-Osborne cases dealing with the situation we have here where the United States has declined to make a certification?
There have not been, Your Honor, and I did check yesterday.
All right. Well, then let me ask you what you think we should make of the Supreme Court's statement in Osborne that only in the set of cases where Congress has absolutely barred remand, that is, the cases where the Attorney General has certified employee status, does today's decision hold sway. This is the language at 896 of the opinion. Only in the extraordinary case in which Congress has ordered the intercourt shuttle to travel in just one way from state to federal court does today's decision hold sway. What are we to make of that? Your argument is, as I take it, that it doesn't matter whether Congress has ordered the shuttle to work just one way, and the court does seem to be saying the opposite.
Your Honor, in Osborne, the court was presented with three alternative grounds for ruling on jurisdiction. There was the ground of 2679D2, which is the one it ruled on, but it also was presented with alternative grounds, including the grounds under the Waco decision that 1447D does not bar review of the certification issue alone, even if regardless of whether it has jurisdiction over the remand order. And the third argument was that it was presented with was another alternative, that jurisdiction, 1447D bars review of remand only when the court is determining that there was no jurisdiction at the time of removal. Now, the court decided to rule only on the first issue. And so it was ruling that...
I don't think you're addressing the question I asked. The Supreme Court told us a particular thing about 1447D, that it governs unless Congress has absolutely forbidden remand. Right? Now, much of the Supreme Court's decision seemed to me to be about distinguishing the two situations, one in which the Attorney General certifies employee status and one in which it doesn't. And it discusses at length the difference between these situations. And it winds up with this only clause. I'm asking you to address whether there is some way we can put the only clause to one side. You're discussing other grounds on which it might have decided the case. I'm asking you to address the ground on which it actually decided the case.
That's true, Your Honor. The ground that it was holding on was that 2679D2 does indeed act or supersedes 1447D. But that does not mean that there might be other grounds for retaining jurisdiction.
Then why would the court say only when, rather than, in your view, at least when, maybe? You're just asking us to ignore what the court actually said and to hold maybe it should have said something else. Well, maybe it should have.
Your Honor, I think, well, there's two responses to that. First, it did not, in that case, expressly overrule any cases holding that Waco would govern or that jurisdiction is at the time of removal is the only question. In fact, it impliedly said that whether we have jurisdiction over the certification issue is separate from whether we have jurisdiction over the remand order. It expressly stated those are two separate issues. And in addressing those two separate issues, it addressed whether the remand or whether the Westfall certification issue could be reviewed under 1291. Well, if it felt that it needed to have jurisdiction over the remand order in order to address this, the Westfall certification, it wouldn't need to address the application of 1291 because it had ruled back in Quackenbush.
I'm now completely lost. Finality is a necessary condition for appeal, but not a sufficient one. And therefore, the court has to first say it's final, and then it has to decide whether 1447D blocks review, even if it is final.
That's correct. But
now you seem to be arguing, however, that finality is a sufficient condition for appellate jurisdiction, and that just asks us to ignore 1447D altogether.
No, what I'm saying is, Your Honor, is that the court in Quackenbush had already said that a remand order is final, whereas before there was some intimation that it was not. So it had already said that a remand order is definitely appealable under 1291. So there would have been no need for it to address the application of 1291 if it felt that it needed to have the remand order, jurisdiction over the remand order to address the Westfall. In addition, although there have been no decisions since Osborne, it is true. Nonetheless, the court in Osborne did not disavow any prior appellate court opinion saying that Waco provided jurisdiction over the Westfall certification. And in fact, it cited all of the cases with approval that so held, including the Eliota case and others that have been cited.
I must say I don't even understand why you're citing Waco. Waco holds that if there are two distinct legal claims, say a tort claim and a contract claim, and the district court resolves the tort claim and remands the contract claim, the tort claim, which is there, finally resolved in federal court and not going back to state court, is appealable. We don't have two claims, one finally resolved in federal court and one going back to state court.
But the courts of appeals, all the other circuits, have interpreted Waco as applying in this exact same situation. In addition, the consensus view, which again has not been changed by the Osborne decision, is that 1447D applies only when a remand is based on a determination that there was no subject matter jurisdiction at the time of removal. In this case, it's undisputed that there was subject matter jurisdiction at the time of removal under 2679D3. Under that consensus view, the remand is not based on 1447C, and consequently 1447D does not bar review of...
You're really asking us to just completely ignore what the Supreme Court said. If that's what the upshot of Osborne is, the whole discussion of the Supreme Court is pointless. It would have said 1447D is irrelevant. Instead, it says that 2679D2 makes an exception to 1447D.
Well, yes. That is correct, Your Honor. And in doing so, it is granted the right to appeal from somebody who has been denied Westfall certification, as long as the Attorney General certifies them to begin with. And in this instance, that same right of appeal should be granted to Jaskolski. There's no rational basis for distinguishing between these two decisions because the district court reached the same conclusion in both circumstances. Under the Due Process Clause, there is an equal protection analysis applied to federal statutes, and consequently, there has to be a rational basis for granting somebody a right of appeal in one instance and denying them a right of appeal in another. In both circumstances, the district court ruled that somebody was not an employee of the United States. And consequently, there is no rational basis for distinguishing between those two circumstances. As a result, this court should exercise its jurisdiction and find that Jaskolski was indeed an employee of the government entitled to the protections of the Westfall Act against the Daniels claims. The Daniels here seek to hold Mr. Jaskolski liable for the acts he committed at the request and direction of the government, including FBI agent Campbell and Assistant U.S. Attorney Butler. And it is undisputed here that Campbell and Butler directed every detail of Joe's performance during that investigation and prosecution. There's no dispute, I don't think, that if Campbell and Butler had done the exact same things themselves, that they would be entitled to that protection of the Westfall Act. And I think I'm certain that if Mr. Jaskolski had been, for example, a law school student volunteering as an extern for the U.S. Attorney's Office and had done the exact same things, they would have certified him as an employee. Well, there are no facts here that apply to Joe that should change that same result. The employee is defined as an employee of the federal agency or a person acting on behalf of a federal agency, whether it's permanently or temporarily, whether with or without compensation. And the courts have made it clear that that definition means you don't need to be on the government's payroll. It doesn't have to be a contract here. The Supreme Court in the Logue case, in fact, acknowledged that the definition would include an employee of a non-governmental employer who is placed under the supervision of the government. That's the exact same situation as we have in this case. The critical factor is whether the government controlled and directed. Controlled is a bad word, but rather because, as you have pointed out, the last time we were here on this case, no person controls another. The real question here is who gets to decide whether you turn the screw clockwise or counterclockwise. And in this case, it's undisputed that the government did that. They're the ones that decided what was done. The only question is the legal implication here. And the district court and the government have interposed legal objections to that conclusion. First is, again, that they didn't have the ability to coerce. But that's not the question. The second issue, it's based on consent. It's not based on coercion. The second issue is they've said who was decided where he would be day to day, but that's not the issue. The question is who controlled the details of his performance. Again, it's undisputed that the government did. And consequently, the court should be found to be the employer, or Jaskolski should be found to be the employee of the government, and he should be granted the protections of the Westfall Act. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brennett. Mr. Scherer.
Thank you, Your Honor. With respect to your question about the Osborne case, I see the analysis at least in two ways in the part two of the court's opinion. First, it analyzes the immediate appealability under the Cohen collateral order doctrine. Then it moves to in addition under part B, the 2A and the 2B.
It's not in addition. First, there is a final order, and then they have to decide whether review of that order is blocked by 1447D.
I think if you read the opinion, the court says and quotes with approval several of the courts that have said that to the extent an order denies Westfall immunity, it is immediately appealable as a final order under Cohen. Then I think the court looks at the separate question of whether the remand order, which is part and parcel of the order, in some cases a duplicate, is itself appealable. And I think the court said in part 2A of its analysis that the courts, and it cites with approval there, that denials of scope are immediately appealable. It cites with approval one case in which...
I'm totally lost. What you seem to be saying is that 1447D just systematically doesn't exist, that every time there is an order of remand, it's final and appealable, and therefore the Court of Appeals ought to decide all the issues involving the remand, even though it can't review the remand order, C-1447D.
No, I take it...
And therefore, of course, Kircher was wrongly decided, because the Supreme Court said in Kircher that that was a final order, but 1447D blocked remand, and therefore it wasn't going to discuss the merits, not one word about the merits. And your view is, I take it, that that was completely wrong.
No, we distinguished Kircher by showing that, in fact, and you've got me jumping back and forth in my analysis, but the first part of the analysis, and the court adopts it, is the immediate appealability of a collateral order.
Why didn't the Supreme Court discuss the merits in Kircher?
Oh, in that case, because it found that, in fact, the district court found it lacked subject matter jurisdiction under the traditional analysis that existed as to how 1447C and D interrelate, and the court found that you have to read in Thermtron and so forth, you have to read those two provisions.
That's why 1447D blocked review of the remand order. What you're saying, as I understand it, is that whenever an order is final and appealable as a final order, the Court of Appeals should discuss whether the order was correct, even if under 1447D the court can't do anything about it.
No, I'm saying in this case where you're talking about immunity, and this is a special situation unlike those other situations, there is a different quality to that part of the order in which the immunity is reviewable.
It's final. That's just a 1291 question, right? It's not specially final or indifferently final or final on Thursdays. It's either final or not.
It's actually specially final. It's a construct on 1291, Your Honor, because the court recognizes that if you have to suffer through a trial, you've lost the very thing that the immunity protects you from.
Is there any case that you're aware of where the Supreme Court has said, we are going to discuss the merits of a subject that has been remanded, even though we cannot review the remand order?
Not specifically, but in this case, I think what the Supreme Court said is we can...
When you say not specifically, I think you mean no.
Well, let me put it this way. I think what the court said in this case is that a collateral order such as one denying immunity is immediately appealable. It cites with approval all of those decisions which allowed that to be the case. And I think what the court has done is said there are two parts to a remand order. One part can be the part in which it rules on the merits of, say, an immunity question, and the other part is, in fact, the final order that it issues regarding the remand.
Between necessary and sufficient conditions. Finality is a necessary condition for appellate jurisdiction, but not a sufficient one.
But it's
saying that any necessary condition, when satisfied, is also sufficient.
No, I'm saying in this case, it would be odd then, and I would move you then to footnote 17, which is not part of its analysis of jurisdiction, but where the court then talks about 2679D3, and I wonder why the court had to talk about that at all in this context if it wasn't in fact reserving it as it had before the traditional interrelationship of 1447C and D as the basis for appellate jurisdiction over remand orders. And there, in Thermtron and so forth, the court has said, if the district court had jurisdiction at the instant it obtained the case, then its dismissal is not for lack of subject matter jurisdiction and is reviewable. And that's why...
Then why did the Supreme Court write Part 2B the way it did? Right, what you're doing is reciting the arguments given in the Solicitor General's brief in Osborne, but that was not the argument the court accepted. It would have been a much easier case if the court had just said, since the district court had jurisdiction, therefore we can review the remand order, but that's certainly not what Part 2B says.
Well, and I think the court was looking into the question separate and apart from the collateral order doctrine. Otherwise, it would have just, why not skip the collateral order doctrine altogether
The question I'm asking is, what do we make of the opinion the Supreme Court actually wrote, rather than the opinion that the United States in Osborne asked the Supreme Court to write?
Well, and I think what you make of this decision is that it is limiting itself only to having decided the interrelationship of 2679D2 and 1447D.
What do you make of the only when paragraph?
I think it's a. I think what it's saying is simply that. As I understand it, it's saying when you have two anti-shuttling provisions, this one will control in that circumstance.
Well, then you're asking us to treat only when as especially when. They're completely different meanings.
Well, they can have different meanings, but I think what the court is doing is addressing the very issue. In fact, this issue wasn't brought to it. It did reach out to address it, but I think the point is it sided with approval Thermtron in the same paragraph as its ruling in this respect. In Thermtron, you cannot make the argument that Thermtron, therefore, is no longer good law. In Thermtron, has the traditional interrelationship of 1447C and D as part of its analysis, as a major part of its analysis. And so what I think the court is saying is simply that in respect of 2679D2, that one will trump by itself 1447D. When you get to D3, you can't look at D3 to trump anything. You then must go into the analysis provided by Thermtron, in which case you look at whether the district court had subject matter jurisdiction from the outset. I think that's all that's been decided here, and that in the absence of an anti-shuttling provision in D3, you then have to go to the other
analysis. As I understand it, what you're asking us to say is that even though the Supreme Court clearly distinguished D2 and D3, you're asking the Seventh Circuit to say, notwithstanding that, there is no difference whatsoever in appellate jurisdiction between D2 and D3 cases.
Yes, ultimately the bottom line is exactly right. What I'm saying is, for purposes of appellate jurisdiction, the answer is the same. The analysis may be different.
Be happy.
Excuse me, Your Honor?
That argument ignores the many paragraphs that the court devoted to distinguishing between D2 and D3.
Well, that's right for purposes of the anti-shuttling provision, but not for purposes of the Thermtron analysis.
Well, argument that the denial of certification decision is reviewable, even though the remand order is not, makes the review of the former completely advisory. If the court, this court can review the denial of certification decision, but can't do anything about it because we can't review the remand order, then
you can review the certification order by simply acknowledging that the case is on remand to the trial court in state court, and that there are two tracks now going simultaneously. May I complete my answer to this, Your Honor? And the one track is that the remand has been essentially stayed in the trial court because of the 3-year stay on the trial. But the fact is, it creates, as we see it, and this is what we argued in our supplemental memorandum, the Supreme Court simply created a two-track system in which this court reviews the immunity question but can't review the remand order concretely. But when you come out with your decision on the immunity question, it may affect, in fact, what happens in the state court. It seems to me that's the only way you can assure that the immunity provided by the Westfall Act is actually protected. Otherwise, the individual winds up back in state court facing the very trial that the immunity was supposed to protect
them from. He should be facing.
Well, that's a different question because if you're jumping ahead.
The Attorney General had certified, this case would be in federal court.
Well, that's right, but in cases in which we're wrong, we certainly want to provide the opportunity to the employee to appeal the question of his immunity and challenge it at the district court level, as was appropriate here, and appeal it.
We think that 1447D says you can't appeal it. If the Attorney General is wrong, then the state court will determine that the Attorney General is wrong.
If I may, Your Honor, 1447D says you can't appeal for the reasons that are prescribed in 1447C, and 1447C says it's been read that way by the Supreme Court.
That the Supreme Court is put on it, and Osborne tells us there's a limit to that clause.
Well, it hasn't said that specifically. It's said in the case of a D2 anti-shuttling.
There are justices who would overrule Thermtron forthwith, but not yet equaling 5.
Yes, that's right. But in terms, but the court cited with approval Thermtron in its 2B analysis. And to the extent that that's still a viable analysis, it means the court should look at D3 in terms of the interrelationship of 1447D and C. And that in a case where this district court had subject matter jurisdiction from the outset, the remand order itself is appealable. It's only in cases where there's a defect in the removal or lack of subject matter from jurisdiction from the outset, which is Kircher, where the court found there was lack of subject matter jurisdiction from the outset. That's what the district court ruled, and the court said that was enough. We don't peek behind that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Scherr.
I may, for the reasons otherwise stated in our brief, we think the Attorney General's scope decision was correct.
Your Honor, Stephen Sursik for Rick and Anna Daniels, and the Daniels believe that the court should dismiss the case for lack of subject matter jurisdiction based upon the language in Osborne versus Haley, at least in part upon it, the language that only in the extraordinary case in which Congress has ordered the intercourt shuttle to travel just one way from state to federal court does today's decision hold sway. And, Your Honor, that as the court has pointed out, the holding of Osborne was that 1447 is the controlling statute unless there's an exception. In Osborne, the court found the exception of 2679D3. However, in contrast to that, in 2679D2, there simply is no jurisdiction and no exception to 1447D. And so, as the court has pointed out, there are two steps in the analysis. One is there a final appealable order, and then is a review of that order blocked by 1447D. Obviously, it is blocked by 1447D and controlled by the Osborne case. And the policies of expediency and of Osborne under 1447D should hold sway for dismissal of this case. We reincorporate the arguments in our motion to dismiss and our supplemental memorandum, and unless the court has any further questions, I'll sit down.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Anything further, Mr. Brandon?
Yes, Your Honor, quickly. The statement in the court's opinion in Osborne is only in the extraordinary case in which Congress has ordered, etc., does today's decision hold sway. And today's decision was under 2679D3. As you pointed out, there's a difference between that and D2, and consequently there would be a different analysis for D2. Under Your Honor's, just Judge Easterbrook's reading of this sentence, it would suggest that the court is somehow overruling Thermtron or Quackenbush or the earlier decisions, that there are other grounds. There are other ways to avoid the bar of 1447D. And I would also point out, just Judge Easterbrook, you brought up the Kircher case. In that case, the Supreme Court said our decision would be different if we found that the state court would not be able to decide this question. And I understand that the state court initially might have had jurisdiction to address the question of whether Jaskolski was an employee. But I think once the district court has ruled, it's not collateral estoppel, because if you rule it, it's not subject to appeal. But it doesn't make sense
that any different from Kircher. The federal district court in Kircher made a decision, and the Supreme Court said, on remand, the state court can make its own decision.
The difference is that this decision is affecting the United States' interests. They are the ones that are going to be substituting in if we win on that issue. And so their reward for winning in the district court is that we get to litigate the issue without them defending it. The other point, I wanted to address your suggestion that this would be in a mere advisory opinion. It wouldn't be, because your declaration, your finding that we were an employee, the United States has stated, and you can enter this as part of your authority on appeal. The United States has stated if you make that finding, they will certify in the state court proceeding and re-remove. We'll end up in the same place. So there can be an effective remedy granted by this court's decision.
Thank you very much. The case will be taken under advisement. The court will be in recess.